Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. If you're looking for an incisive Mac podcast, this is not the show you're looking for.
Right.
These are not the politics you're looking for.
Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. We're here to discuss the week's Mac news with the usual crew, but the addition of Alex G. Fox, because he's brilliant as well. Joining me, great panel to discuss it. Andy Inaka was supposed to be here, but he sent me a message through at the last minute saying he's got to cry off. He's coming next week instead. Thanks, Andy. Always lucky to have you on, so thanks a lot. But it doesn't mean anything really, because the panel that we have is equally good, and it started off with Don McAllister of Screencast Online. How's it going, sir?
Good afternoon, Ewan. Yeah, it's going great. Thank you very much. Another busy week. Always nice to have a chat on a Friday afternoon. I know the weekend's nearly here then.
Okay, so now if you were Will Green, the Pebble 2 weeks on would be a piece of crap. What are you thinking so far?
No, it's still, I have to say, hands up, I haven't really been out the house very much, so I tend not to wear it in the house, but I'm still impressed with it. They've brought a new update out, which changed a couple of little things. They've given people more instructions on how to set it up, etc. But we're still waiting for the other apps that need to come along, really, to be honest. When we see some more apps, I think it will be of more benefit.
I'm just sitting waiting till the day when Don comes on and goes, it's a piece of crap.
It doesn't do a lot, though, does it? I have to say with one. It doesn't do a fat lot, does it, Don?
It's a watch, and it talks to your iPhone, and it'll send you messages, or it'll receive messages and stuff. It does need more apps, I have to say.
What date is it, Don, looking at your watch?
What date is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's over there. It's the...
No, I think he's saying it doesn't show the date.
Oh, well, what do you need the date for? I always have my iPhone with me, so I can check the iPhone's date.
Don's got a man who tells him the date, Will. Next to Don, it's Dr. Happy Mac. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, good.
Excellent. Got your eye on a fast, sleeky car that no one wants for £1,200?
Yes. One of the big buying signs for me is it so horrible and so unwanted by the rest of the planet that you can have it for virtually nothing? And if the answer to that is yes, I do want it.
Have you checked insurance yet? Because that could be the deciding factor.
Well, the Saab is Group 20, so I'm figuring anything's better than that.
Oh, right, okay. Now I'd check that, because it might not be. It might be your worst nightmare.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. It would be lovely, and I'd love it, but I've got a wood burner to install and a marriage that I'm probably slightly...
I was going to say, it's not the insurance that's going to kill you, it's your wife with a set of curtain scissors.
She's got the right type of insurance, it'll be fine. I think it's called life insurance.
Exactly. That dulcet tone was Alex G. Fox, photographer and map stitcher. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well. I'm doing the sewing this week, not DHM. Mm. I'd like to congratulate Don on air for his charitable donations.
Yeah,
very well done, Mr. Thank you very much.
Philanthropic as he is.
He's a great man.
He is. A great, great man.
What you like.
Next to Alex, Kelly G, still in Mom's bedroom.
Yeah.
And that's not meant to sound anything different other than you still... How long have you got? What's the status on the new pad?
I think next weekend we're finally going to end up over there, so...
Ooh. In time for the show?
Hopefully. We should have time. Next week will probably be the last one here. We would be moving this weekend, but we are going to head east to my native land because my dad is having his birthday this weekend.
Oh, happy birthday, Dad. Well done.
It's a surprise, but he doesn't watch this show, so he'll never know we're coming.
Excellent.
Doesn't he know it's his birthday?
Oh, he knows. But he doesn't know I'm going to be there.
I think he kind of spotted it. Flicking in and out on the screen, that would be Kyle Swagger in the Philippines. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, I just want to tell you that Justin TV sucks.
Yeah, it's dropping all over the shop. So
we're not even live right now.
We are, but we're not. It's one of those complex issues that I've got no time to sort out. So it's running six lines never helps as well.
Still five.
And people come on here and say, why can't we send video back down the pipe? I got six people here. What do you think I am? So, Kyle, you had a week off last week. Romantic dinner with the missus.
Yes. It was really nice. Chinese take-in and a movie.
You're joking. You gave it the
Macho
delivery.
It was bloody hot, as you Brits would say. It's bloody hot. And that wasn't bad.
It was better than Will's Alex Guinness.
It was a lot.
We just stayed home, and it was kind of nice, actually. So it turned out better than I thought. Anyways, that's what I thought, anyways.
Good. And talking to crap impressions, Will Green.
That's a nice introduction. Look at that. I'm brilliant, I am. With my impressions.
You've frozen. Wonderful. You've frozen for some reason, Greeny. His own mind. Greeny's frozen. Someone had to freeze, and it's Greeny. There we go. Bad luck.
Well, voice-wise.
No, your video's frozen, mate. I don't know why. I can't give up.
That's probably as well, to be honest. Has it caught me in a nice frozen position?
Oh, you're back again now. You're back moving. It's all right. It's fine. It's fine. Oh, you're back moving. Reviews. We've had some reviews. I said last week, please give us reviews, and we've had blooming loads of them. I'm going to regret this. There's six of them to read out. So quickly as we can, then. Thank you for those people that wrote reviews. If you want to help us, do nothing else but leave a written review. Don't just leave a rating. Write out a little review. You can say whatever you want. I'm not asking for great reviews only. But reviews really, really bolster us up in iTunes. So if you've got an iTunes account, get your friends and family and that kind of stuff. Subscribe to the podcast. Write a review. And then they can unsubscribe if they really want. But tons and tons of reviews. I'd love us. We've got 69 reviews at the moment, which is great. But I'd love to have 100, 120, 200 reviews within the next few months if we could. That would be wonderful, please. Thank you for so much. First one is from Attila the Hun, and it's actually quite a good review. I thought it was going to be scathing based on that. Great.
Is it actually from Attila the Hun?
It is actually him, yeah. I've had it DNA tested. Great, the best Mac podcast on iTunes. Irreverent, funny and informative. Great selection of guests who are not only from the UK, but from the States and even the Philippines.
No, hey. Yes.
No, no reviews in the Philippines store. We got
We got to change that.
You're the man in Manila. You're in the Manila office. You need to change that, Mr. Swagger.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll get on it next week.
If you want to know what that's happening in the Mac world, then get a unique perspective on this news and subscribe to this podcast. Cheers. Clyde wrote in and said, superb, informative and entertaining top Mac podcast. Thank you very much, sir. Darren said, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and for the most, if I miss an episode, then I'm not really bothered. But the Mac show is not to be missed.
Oh,
it's a light-hearted look at Mac news with a great cast of regular guests and often irreverent attitude. If you're looking for a serious and gritty summary of the week's tech news, this isn't it. But if you're looking for a fun show staffed by enthusiasts who know how to have fun,
yay,
there isn't anything better.
I would rather have fun.
I'd rather have that review than stick in the muds. The fourth one. I haven't got a person for this. All the Mac news with very bad Alec Guinness impressions. But this is the most friendly way of getting your Mac news. It can sometimes go off on a tangent and Ewan must feel like he's herding cats at times. But this doesn't take away from the show. In many cases, it adds a slant to what would be a very dry conversation. This is the show you're looking for. Thank you. I think that was Batwinch sent that one in. Five, yet again, BTN has me crying with tears of joy while I listen to the podcast. Seriously informative and unintentionally humorous at times, with suggested themes almost worthy of a beat machine, or we'll edit that out a bit later. Yeah, sure you will. This podcast has become my number one must-listen-to podcast of the week. Full credit to Ewan for bringing the team together, for bringing together a top weekly team. This review would not be complete without the obligatory mention of Mr. Green, my idol. Such a crack-up. To watch and listen live one day would be such a great treat and a challenge from here in New Zealand. Great work. Keep it up, Dave W.
Goodness.
Thank you, David. That's very kind. And the last one. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of cases, those of the British Tech Network have taken over from the flashier and glitzier ones. I don't know if I'm upset at that or not. I can't work out if that's a credit. Never afraid to say what they think, and I often wonder if they ought to just be afraid a little bit. The show is full of character and characters. Well worth your time. And another obligatory mention of Will Green is that he is the British Columbo.
What?
An allegedly bumbling metaphor in a raincoat which hides a razor sharp wit, incisive cunning. Homesian is he, although his Alec Guinness impression needs a lot of work.
I'd like to. I think we should draw a line under this Alec Guinness depression because I believe it's fantastic. I'll do it one last time. That's it. Ready?
Yeah.
Go on then.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
You still haven't got me, mate.
It's brilliant.
Oh, dude!
Good night, everybody.
Don't worry, we'll edit that.
Yeah. What was the time?
I have no clue. I haven't started the green app.
Okay.
He's been so well behaved lately. I've got it lulled into a false sense of security and not starting the green app.
To quote the comment, I bet you don't.
I bet I do, because that's a bad one. I need to get that one. Thank you for your reviews. Please, please, please give us more reviews. If you write them, we'll read them out. If there's 6, if there's 20 next week, I'll still read them all out. The whole show will be reviews. Yeah, even the bad ones. There you go. Thank you ever so much for those. Paul was the last one, by the way. Very much appreciated. Thank you, Paul. The Week in Apple News. Let's start with something kinder Apple and non-Apple, if you like. Came out last night, really. The Chrome Pixel is out there. This is a 1.8 gigahertz machine. It's a 3:2 ratio screen, which Alex and I would probably latch onto straight away as a good picture ratio. It's pretty expensive, though. You're talking $1,200 for the Wi-Fi version. If you want the LTE version, it goes up to $1,500. You get 1 terabyte of storage on Google Drive with it, though, as part of the package. And it just runs a browser. It's not an OS in the truest sense. There's lots of people out there saying this is a competitor for the Air, but I think that's a hell of a leap.
No, I don't think so. That's more than a stretch. I mean, sorry, I think you're paying more for the storage. If you're paying $1,200 for a browser, then may somebody help you, please.
Hold on, wait a moment.
Oh, said the man who works very closely with Google.
Yeah, this will be unbiased, I'm sure.
Right, here we go. Greenies unwound.
No, all I was going to say in defense, it's not just a browser. A Google Chrome OS is a genuine OS, and so if you're sort of outside of a Wi-Fi connection, you can still get on with your work. It's not just a web browser. I think that's only fair to point out.
It's a genuine OS. What apps does it run then?
Runs a browser.
Lots of apps. Yeah, lots of Google apps.
Lots of Google apps.
Inside the browser.
Within the browser environment.
Yeah.
They're extensions.
I can play solitaire on the web. Can I play it if I'm offline?
All I'm saying is, but for sort of productivity for a business use and stuff like this, and if you're using sort of Google Apps for business and on a Mac, and you go out of Signal or Wi-Fi or something like that, it can sometimes cause a bit of a problem because not all of the Google apps are
really.
No, hold on.
Oh no, I've lost my internet connection. Oh, what shall I do?
No, hold on.
This is not the Wi-Fi you're looking for.
No, this is. I just can't get. We've got a fantastic new computer. It's so good that even if you lose Wi-Fi, it still works.
No, that's not the point. The point is, right, that if you're running Google apps on your MacBook or Windows PC, not all of the apps, and quite a few of them, I will point out, the most important ones, will allow you to continue productivity offline, including mail and that sort of stuff, and productivity apps like Docs and things,
like a computer would.
So I'm going to give up now.
What I will say is that it's I would presume. I do not know this. I'm not a developer yet. I would presume that creating an environment, whether it's an OS or not, but creating an environment where not having internet access, particularly when what you're using is Google's apps, which all sort of rely on that, finding a way for that to sort of gracefully fail would be a really tough nut to crack, in my estimation. So the fact that they have done it, to me, is an interesting thing from a technological perspective. It doesn't mean I want one. It doesn't mean I think it's necessarily a good idea. I certainly don't think it's its own OS just because they go, you can still work if you don't have Wi-Fi. But it's interesting to see what they're doing. The thing that I'm the most interested in is, honestly, what Amazon's going to do. at this point if Amazon decides that what they need is some sort of Android-powered thing that's like more than a Kindle Fire, but less than a full-on netbook. I'm curious what they're going to end up doing, because Amazon's the one that gets discounted a lot, and I mean, there are some understandable reasons why, but it's always interesting to see what they'll do. Like when Apple started announcing that you could rent a TV show for 99 cents, Amazon said you could buy one. And whenever there's been any sort of movement, it seems like Amazon has always, at some point, come out with their own thing. So I want to know what they're going to do. We know what Apple's done for portable computing. So I'm wondering if Amazon's going to get into that market now that Google's leaning in it too, or if they're going to just stick to, no, we make an e-reader that plays Angry Birds.
But Google, I mean, Amazon have never looked at cloud active documents. I mean, they've got the Glacier thing, but that's just a straight archive utility. It's not even close to Carbonite or any of those kind of active cloud services. So they've made no issue of being even close to looking at a standalone OS with a standalone piece of hardware that operates in the same way as this.
Right, and that's why I'm curious what will happen, because they weren't really in the tablet market either until they built Kindle Fire, which does more stuff. And I think it was the iPad, which is sort of e-reader plus in the palm of your hand, but more than a phone, that sort of pushed them into that market. And so I'm curious.
Don's been quiet, which kind of perturbs me, actually, because...
No. Well, I mean, the thing about the actual Pixel machine itself, I mean, I've never used Chrome OS, so I can't really comment, but it does seem a very limited market. But I suppose if you're heavily invested into the Google OS and Google Apps and stuff, you know, it might be a high-end machine for someone to actually buy and use, but I can't see the market being that big for now. And it's certainly not going to drive people into that market, I don't think. But the thing that interests me, though, is Google are making more and more stuff. They're actually making more and more physical devices. And I know there's rumors of Google stores opening, would have been laughable, you know, a couple of years ago, because Google has always been about search. But they're sort of expanding with Android and all the Nexus devices. We've got the Google glasses coming down the track. We've got the Chromebook, the original Chromebook. And now we've got this high-end PC as well, you know, this high-end computer that, well, not so much high-end in spec, but in, you know, it's fit and finish. And it's sort of being aimed at the higher market. They seem to be rapidly expanding this portfolio of physical devices that they could probably start flogging in a Google shop when they actually do come online. And it's very interesting to see them move from a search company to, you know, a similar company to Apple, really. They're going down that same route. They're getting into mobile devices, they're getting into computers, they're getting into operating systems. So it's just interesting to see where they go with it.
Well, there's a certain element of me that thinks that their business profile when it comes to hardware is more like a kid with ADHD. They kind of like, and then, yeah, we did that. And Android is the only thing that they've kind of stuck at. The Google One phone, that never kind of pursued. No, it's evolved into the Nexus thing now. But they don't seem to complete an awful lot. And I think the Android platform, as far as the OS is concerned, they get to do something new each time, which is what keeps their interest. But they pull out of the pocket and then nothing happens. And you get the Google glasses and they're fantastic. And you know, a year ago, we're all sitting going, ooh, they're still not available. You still can't get them. Sergey Brin's walking around with them on and he's going to have this under his left arm, said Tom Morrett last night on The Big Show. And he's right. You know, when are we going to see this? When's it going to actually function? They run a competition for Google glasses. And if you win the competition, you still have to pay £1,500 to get the glasses.
I mean, wow.
They don't seem like they complete anything.
Well, they have to be dabbling. They have to move away from web search, don't they? Because they're basically an ad company at the moment. Mm. And they need to move away from that to keep the revenues up. And you know, web search is going away. It's everything's moving to apps, and you know, people are developing their own solutions for things like Google Maps. You've got Apple doing their own Maps thing. So they've got to look at different ways of expanding. And you know, into physical stuff is probably the way to go. But just how well, you know, it's all down to execution again, isn't it? You know, that's the thing with Apple. They come up with great products, but they can execute on it as well, and they can deliver, and they can support.
They're a services company. That's the key. That's where Google's strength has always been. They're a service company. Gmail, reasonably solid. There are a lot of people who rely on it to a certain extent for things that are important. So there's, you know, a lot of companies, Google Apps for Business. Like, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even consider that if it weren't reasonably reliable. And that's the biggest gap I see between Google and Apple, is that Google can make stuff like that just work. And Google gets it done. And like, I don't ever worry about Gmail being down and my Mac.com email goes down reasonably often. So, you know, Jizz is another one that a lot of people have talked about. And, you know, documents and data, the amount of troubleshooting that goes into that, even in the current iteration on iCloud, is not insignificant for people who are trying to utilize it as a sync service. So for people who use Google for that sort of stuff, it tends to just work. And so it's very interesting to me to see them, to see Google get into the hardware business, because like you guys are saying, they don't see, you know, it's very ADD when they do actually take a shot at hardware. So I think it's I think it's going to be interesting to see how that goes down. And I'm hoping Apple figures out that they are not a services company offering services. So at a bare minimum, they need to get that stuff reliable. And once they do, I think it'll be then at that point, it'll be sort of a Coke versus Pepsi debate.
Yeah,
they are very similar. They do the same thing. It's just a matter of the flavor you prefer.
Carl, you had a point there.
It's funny what Don just said there about that we're getting into very much apps, search is kind of on the way out. And I kind of actually agree with Don there. We still use search, but it seems very interesting to me how apps have came into our life. And here we're sitting here talking about essentially a device with a browser that's based on search. So how is this thing going to be a success when it seems like the market is actually going a completely different way? Yes, you can do apps inside the browser, but still, it's a browser. And what do you do with a browser? You search and you browse the web.
Well, if I may.
Dive in, mate, yeah.
Okay, well, firstly, I mean, I've used the operating system, the Chrome OS. I'd used it on Parallels. And at the time when I used it, there wasn't an awful lot going on. It literally was... It was almost like having a machine that you didn't need an operating system to fire up your browser in. That's all it appeared to be at the time. But from first point is the BBC are reporting this as a touchscreen Chromebook.
It is touchscreen, yeah.
Okay, because I just thought that was quite important because no one's mentioned that, because that's quite a big innovation compared to a normal laptop. They're the first people to really go, you know, not a pad with a keyboard. This is an actual touchscreen laptop. So that's a big start. Secondly, Google, to make money, need advertising. With everything the way it's going on pads and various other things, because it's being put in an application, the ability to advertise on that application gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And in fact, it gets more and more obtrusive for the user because the advertising has to take up so much more of the space to justify people paying for it. If you're doing it in a browser-based thing, you can fill a lot more of the page with adverts that aren't going to necessarily interfere. And what that will do, and the market this could work for, is you're going to have word processors. You're going to have these things written in HTML5, which, you know, is a universal programming language for everybody, unlike, you know, iOS and OSs and Mac and Windows and all the rest of it. So you're going to be able to write once a piece of software that will work, not only on this Chromebook, but it will work in Safari on your iPad. It will work on your Windows machine. So this is the right once place for applications. And it'll also then bring down, if not to very little, maybe even nothing, the cost of software. So this might be a buy one piece of hardware, free software for more or less the life of the machine, because it's all going to be supported by advertising, but non-intrusive advertising. So this is a market. Maybe this is very expensive, but this is the first, you know, iteration of this product. But this could end up being a very, very cheap laptop for certain parts of the world which don't have the money to buy software and therefore don't have the money to upgrade software. And for developers to develop once and be able to go on any platform you want, it must be a godsend.
Yeah, but at 2400 by 1700 pixels, this is not going to be... This is not going to be a cheap laptop for the world.
No, but it's like anything. You're not going to make a pile of crap and send it out as your first incarnation of a new operating...
Well, they did last time.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, with the 249 Chromebooks and all that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They've learned their lesson. So they need something which has got some real power. Then people develop for something which is a higher-end machine. It's worth developing for. And then it can filter down. I just think with the advertising and with the, you know, you can, it's, you don't tend to bring out a low-end thing and then build it up. You tend to bring out a high-end thing to get people interested in, like the touchscreen and the things you don't get on other machines, and then, you know, do cheaper versions. I just think it's, they did the first one wrong, and this is where they should have started. But I like the idea of write one for this OS, if you like, but then that will work across any platform you want. And I think developers are like that quite a lot.
I think Alex is right. I think that Google are looking... Yee-hee! I think they're looking 15 or 20 years down the line at the 85% of the planet that is not buying Apple stuff now because they live in conditions where a computer is not a necessity. And I think they're looking further down the line. And I think in 20 years' time, Apple will, and their, will certainly be, and the way that they do things will be an irrelevance, and Google or whatever company comes from India or China and eclipses Google and offers a browser-based operating system on a cheap laptop that connects anywhere via mobile connection, that's how it's going to be. And I think betting on the hardware like Apple do now, I think, and is the wrong thing for 20 years' time. And I think it's quite nice, and obviously Apple make loads of money now, and the hardware is brilliant, and we all love the stuff. But if you're looking at developing your company for, you know, the next half a century, I think Google are making the right moves. I think Apple have got the wrong stuff.
Apple are making their money while they can, I think, maybe, though. Oh,
you would do, but I think, and Google make money as well on the stuff that they're making money on now. But I think with, if you've got your 20-year glasses on, Apple are making the wrong stuff. Google are just starting now to make the right stuff. Yeah, not it's gonna... for 5 years or 6 years, but for, you know, 20 years down the line, that Google are betting on the right horse.
Yeah, it's the only universal process. Because at the moment, they're writing something that will work on anyone else's operating system without any trouble. And then in 20 years' time, they'll only be this.
I think it's not to say Apple won't succeed, but I think if Apple want to be around in 20 years' time, they're going to have to be doing what Google are just starting to do now.
So, I mean, got a point. Please, dive in, Will.
Well, I work very closely with Google, and the area I work in is business. So it strikes me that sort of the discussion we've had, really, the hardware is great, and it's lovely that they've introduced this hardware, but to use the Google services, you can use any hardware, whether it's mobile, a tablet, you know, a laptop. And to be fair to the Chromebook, and to Google Apps, you do need to be 100% efficient a Wi-Fi experience, but not necessarily for those small points that you haven't got Wi-Fi, and they are tiny points, because that's most of us tether to some mobile device, and we've pretty much always got Wi-Fi on the train or whatever, even on the tube now. But I think the way Google are approaching it, it's this, Google search is one thing, a massive thing, and that works really well. If you look at the Google search appliance and things like that, that works in business. But I don't really work on the area. I work in Google Apps for Business. So Google Apps for Business is a productivity suite in the cloud with enterprise-level calendaring and obviously email and everything else. And it can save a business a fortune. And it seems to me to be the future. I think Google are really focusing on enterprise and bringing the Google app development world into the enterprise environment and business environment, and saving businesses a huge amount of money who are moving away from, you know, the traditional Microsoft desktop, you know, stuck to your desktop, and you have to, if you want to get into your enterprise environment, you have to go through a VPN or some other pain in the ass way of getting on with your work and stuff like that. That's the point, really, I'm making. It's, whereas Apple, on the other, so Google are looking at both consumer and they are now focusing in a big way on enterprise, where Apple, and again, I've got a good experience in this, is, and I used to work for Apple and do a lot of enterprise stuff. Apple have totally rubbished their enterprise market. They don't care. No interest at all in business. And they've gone totally... end user, consumer, and I think that will work well for Apple. I think they're strong at it. I think they're good at it. I think that's totally their business model. So I'm not going to say that Apple have taken the wrong decision, because I think they're really good at what they do. But what Google are doing is something a bit different with the Chromebook and stuff like that. They're focusing on enterprise and business.
Chat room's chipping in with theirs. Batwinch says, are we just a great big bunch of whingers? Think how amazed our great grandparents would have been by the technology that we see here that we're now slagging off. Good point. Windrider says, is there a 3G version of this on the Chromebook? There is the 1400 quid one, is an LTE connectable one, so it'll be 4G, in inverted commas 4G. Whether the frequency of that is going to match with the UK, there's no data at the moment. So it might have the wrong frequency on it for UK market. And Matt Jim says, has Will Green been thrown out by his wife, and is he now living in a tent?
Yes, a green tent.
A green tent.
You stop doing images behind me.
Yeah, I just don't have time.
I want a woman with a huge pair of knockers.
I shall find you a huge pair of knockers, mate. Don't worry.
Lovely, thank you.
I think Google Skynet.
Go ahead, Carl.
I think Google Skynet.
No, Microsoft bought Skype. That's going to be Skynet.
No, I just have got this. I'm giving Hollywood terms here, but don't get me wrong. I love Google. I use Google services. I mean, they're great at what they do. But I feel like that's the thing. They got us in on this free bit now. I feel like in the end they're going to end up saying, "Aha, we got you by the balls now." So you're kind of screwed, aren't you? And I don't know if Apple will be around in 20 years or not, but I kind of hope they are, because I don't think Microsoft will be, honestly. I kind of hope they are, because Google, to me, is getting into that. We're always talking about Big Brother and all these sort of stuff. Google's there already.
They know where you are.
Google is there. Mm.
And they're going to give you a laptop that's going to know exactly where you are as well. Good point. Kelly, your bit there about Microsoft being the next Skynet, mate. The thing you've overlooked is that at some point in the future, at a specific time, the sentence has got to read, Microsoft became aware. Never going to happen.
That's probably true. Well, okay, Ballmer can't live forever.
I think the main thing would be that Skynet became self-aware. If Microsoft ever becomes self-aware, they'll just, like,
implode.
They'll just kill themselves on the spot.
I can't believe we made this shit for 30 years.
I mean, it sort of occurs to me why Apple we're on a Mac show, so why Apple has a sort of advantage over Google and Microsoft and everything. Because I was thinking about it the other day. When I first started running my own businesses and I wanted to buy tech, when you went into a store, it didn't matter if it was a superstore or any other store, as soon as you were a business customer, you got taken to the back of the store and you got to sit down in a really nice chair and you got someone come over to you in a less cheap suit, and then they used to make you a cup of coffee and you used to sit down and you didn't even have to go to the tills. They brought the credit card machine to you and it was all really exciting and really new. What Apple have done, they've given that level of service to... You know, you can go and buy a £20 lead in the Apple store and you get the same level of service that we got and felt quite good about ourselves. We felt slightly more important than we do when we went to buy an 800.
That defeats the object then, surely, because if everyone's getting exactly the same service, you're not feeling special.
But that's the point. You don't feel special. But they've now, like as was said earlier by DHM, I think it was, they've now thrown away the idea of anything business. Everyone is just as special as everyone else. And in a funny way, when you go to Apple as a business customer, I don't think you get the same level of affection, if you like, from them as you do as a retail customer.
You need to hold your hand up, though, Alex. I'll defend Apple here, because I've gone in and said, hi, I'm a business customer. Can I have the business advisor? And you get the business advisor straight away, and that person treats you entirely differently.
Well, I've had, I'm not saying they've treated me badly as a business customer, but they've not treated me any better. But what I'm saying, you've got Apple doing this, but then you've got people like Google and you've got Microsoft and any other store or any other system. They don't seem to be able to compete with the fact that every individual that walks in is made to feel as special as we did or I did as a business customer going back in time. And I think that is why Apple have got maybe the next 5 years, no matter what they do. I mean, their equipment works well, and it's lovely, and it looks pretty. But they have got that massive advantage, as they were the first people to make, if you like, the ordinary person in the streets feel special
about every purchase they did. You didn't have to be high in your end market, and you didn't have to be a business customer. And I think that's where the others are always going to be playing catch up.
But I think Apple's approach, though, has been different, hasn't it, in the way they've got into enterprises, because they are still in enterprises, but not just in as, you know, Microsoft normally go in at the corporate level. They've gone in via, well, literally the back door. You know, that they've made their devices really easy to use. They've made them compatible with business systems. I know, you know, people quibble about Exchange support, etc. But, you know, you can, if you want to take an iPhone into a corporate environment, you can actually take it in and use it. And, you know, we see the number of Macs that are now going into the corporate environment. So they're very much focusing on the end user experience and sort of convincing people by making personal purchases that, you know, this is the gear that they want to use when they're working, and then sort of take them into work and take them in that way. So they've not come in from a corporate level. They've come in from the bottom, really. They're getting the executives and the people who use the stuff, sort of infusing them with enthusiasm about Apple, and then that sort of bringing that into the corporate environment that way.
I agree. I mean, I work for a firm who is traditional. They've got their own. They've got the, like the Wise terminals. They're that locked into the corporate ethos, and they've got a couple of people who've come in and go, "Wow, look what Mac can do for you." And people have got the ears of the chief executive, and they've done a few presentations where people have gone, "Wow," and they've shown a couple of videos off an iPad that's linked in directly to a projector, or they've got an Apple TV in and they've started audio, you know, just air videoing it over, and they're getting into the corporate market through that back door, but they're tending to it's individuals that are doing it, as Don says. You're never going to get the corporate IT people to swap over because it's not what they know. Corporate IT people are staffed.
They tried the front door thing with the X server and OS X server, didn't they? And they, you know, the minute they started to make inroads in it, they really annoyed everyone that had made any kind of investment by going, "Oh, see that X server? We don't like that anymore. We're not making that. See that OS X server? Oh, yeah, we've got OS 10.7 server, which isn't really a server. So you're a bit stuck." And I think, like, you know, the enterprise IT people went, "Well, we're not bloody doing that ever again."
But I would say that as a rule, the enterprise IT people are window files in a lot of cases.
Linux files.
Or Linux files, yeah, all right. Which means that they should gravitate to the Unix element of Apple far better, but they don't.
No, they don't, because every time that Apple try and get into the server side of things, they stiff everyone by changing the software, OS X server was a bag of crap from the beginning, and it never, ever got any better until they pulled the plug on it, basically.
It's much simpler than that.
Go on, Kelly.
Tell me what Apple is doing for the next year so that I can plan my IT budget.
Yeah, that doesn't work either, does it?
That's it. I've tried. We've begged them. When I worked in IT, we would talk to the Apple rep and go, "We just want to know because we're looking at pulling the trigger on a huge laptop upgrade project. Is now the time?" And, you know, the best we could get was an occasional, "If you're looking at making a purchase, I'd wait another month or two." You know, that's the best we could get from anybody. And that was something that, as an Apple watcher, somebody that writes for Tuwa, that I already knew. So I wasn't getting any better information out of them than I was getting out of, you know, whoever it is that whispers in Jim Dalrymple's ear. So I don't understand. Like, that to me is going to always be the killer for Apple, is because whenever they're trying to plan out the next 6, 8, 12 months in an IT situation, in plain old corporate IT, they're going to get stuck. And the problem is, I think the reason that a lot of IT people try to shut that down as much as they can, instead of, you know, embracing the consumerization that happens when the CEO comes in and says, "Give me email on my iPhone," I think the first reason they have trouble is because Apple announces nothing ahead of time. And the second reason they have trouble is because, even when it worked, like you were saying, the server hardware wasn't that fantastic. The stuff that you could do with it as a server was pretty limited, which is kind of a bummer because it could be really awesome. And the problem is, as people start to try to expand that reach, I love my iPhone. We've put an Apple TV on the flat screen in every conference room, and all you have to do is shoot your presentation over to it, and now it's great. You know, we've given people iPads so that they have some mobile computing with a little keyboard case. And now, you know, you send somebody on a trip to the rest of the world and they're still able to function without having to huff a giant laptop around with them. When you do these kinds of things, then it becomes, well, can I get a server to do the thing with my data in IT? And the answer is no. And even when it was an available option, when the XServe existed and you could still get a service contract for it, it still wasn't that great an experience. And there were some really basic limitations. Of course, now I can't remember any of them, but this is what happens when you carpool to work with one of the server admins. You learn this stuff. There were some really basic stumbling blocks that Apple just never addressed in server-level OS and server-level hardware that made it really hard to make that any kind of appealing thing once you are a company that needs more serious hardware than a mini with Mountain Lion server on it.
The thing is, Matt, right, okay. If we're going to sort of talk about Apple and Google, which are we still talking about that?
You talk about whatever you fancy, like, mate. Go ahead. I mean, you're not the one that really sticks to the topics anyway. So I don't know why you had to ask for permission there.
No, well, I've as a Apple certified trainer in server and everything else, I've used that and I'm totally familiar with it, and also from the Google side of things as well. And what I found is, I think I think we're on the cusp, and I've worked in lots of businesses that are doing this now. You forget about the servers. They're old news. You forget about the server operating system. You forget about your server admin team and fa-la-la-la-la, because it's all old school. If we take Google as an example, I'm not saying that they're the only person only company who does this, but if you use Google as the server, now, I know that sounds daft, but if you're not familiar with Google Apps for Enterprise, have a look into it. Yeah. And so basically, Google is the server. It looks after all the data. And it's got exactly the same functionality of, you know, groups and privileges and everything that you'd expect from a robust server operating system. You know, all your data is safe. It also allows a Mac using like a Google login works beautifully. I've got to be honest. It's probably the best partnership. From an IT perspective that I've come across, a Mac using Google, wonderful, fantastic. You know, all this sort of productivity and you can collaborate on a document at the same time. It's just seamless and works brilliantly. But it also then extends to whether it's an iPad, whether it's an Android device, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's a BlackBerry, whatever. MDM management is built in there, everything. So I think very shortly, within a three to five year period, we won't be talking about traditional server-based in the building style, you know, like server racks with these, you know, tons of backup systems and the whole pain in the ass thing that it's become, and Exchange and all that gubbins, which is horrible. You'll be talking about a cloud-based server solution, be it Google or be it somebody else.
Based on Google, though.
Hmm?
It'll be based on Google,
yeah.
Yeah, but no, whether Google is the cloud server provider or whether it's some other company, I'm not saying Google's going to be any people at the moment. Let's be honest, they're doing it better than anybody else. But
yeah, but I mean, if you've got
Google,
universal,
if you've got cloud services, and Google are providing cloud services, you know, across the world all the time. If you look at how they do that with Google hardware, running Google operating systems, running Google network protocols, running Google databases. Apple provide iCloud based on Microsoft Azure.
Yeah.
And there you have it.
It's a universal function. It goes back to the Chromebook. In a funny way, I think what Apple have done with their business clients and that sort of business infrastructure, it doesn't help them because quite often it's similar with a photography thing. When you've got if I go into an office, for instance, and I've got an iPad and I can jump onto their system and I can do this, that, and the other. Traditionally, they've spent thousands or hundreds of thousands of pounds for everything they've got infrastructure wise for their, you know, for their tech and their business and everything. And if you come in and it's the same thing you can do at home, e.g., you know, as Kelly was saying, you've got an Apple TV and you've got it hooked up to a screen. Big business, people all that are used to having big IT departments and, you know, spending millions of pounds and having the most complicated, convoluted systems in the world. They don't trust something that you can do equally as easy at home, because to them, it's amateur. It's not, and it works fundamentally just as well as all the other systems. But for big business, it's always got a feeling as this is too cheap, this is too easy. If you can do the same thing at home, then it's really not good enough for us. And I say,
Well, they get paid based on that.
Yeah, but but the trouble is you've got whole departments that are going to fight it because their entire livelihoods are going to go down the drain. That's sort of my correlation with the photographic industry.
Yeah.
You can go and buy a cheap camera and you can produce something of very, very good quality and exceptional value. But there's still people out there that say if you don't spend 50 grand on a Hasselblad kit, then it's got to be crap. The truth is, you know and I know that's not the case, but there's people out there that need to save their position in any industry, and the position is, well, if you can do it at home or you can do it as an amateur, then it can't be good enough for us.
Oh, you've got to live with it. I mean, our entire market has changed on that basis, Alex, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think that's what's going to happen with this tech industry.
Paul Ums has written in the chat room. Sorry, Carl, I'll come back to you a sec. Paul Ums in the chat room is where I work. Most of the users have a Windows PC plugged into our Active Directory, but they have a Mac laptop. We've had some Apple engineers in recently, but they've stressed that the computer is designed for the personal experience. We don't plug Macs into our corporate network because users want that personal experience, unquote. Adam's just come in and said, oh my God, is that Will Green? I imagined that he'd look different. to which Gaspod has replied, maybe that's not the Will Green you're looking for. Very good. Kyle, go ahead, mate.
No, I was going to say, I think everything we've been talking about for the last 35 minutes is going to be irrelevant once the iWatch comes out.
Once the what comes out?
The iWatch.
Right. Thank you, mate, for the brief link. Apple have got a patent out that came through, a continuous screen that wraps around your wrist, and it folds out flat with like one of those snappy things. Great. And someone's come up with a concept watch based on that patent application. I want one.
Oh, yeah, so do I. What it looks like, I want one.
I haven't worn a watch in 4 years until now. I want to be an old fart. I want to own a watch.
Never believe any of these patents.
Sorry, go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, Apple have got so many patents on so many different things that, you know, most of them will never see the light of day. So I wouldn't put too much hope into it, really.
No, but they might stop someone else.
They got pets or pineapples.
But I want one of those watches, whether it does anything or not. I mean, I couldn't give a stuff if it tells you the date or not. I just want it to look on my wrist.
What is the date, Don? Have a look at your watch. Tell me what the date is.
It's the 22nd.
No, he's looking at his computer. He's not looking at his Pebble. You've got him. I'm not wearing it.
I can't believe that they're making... I mean, it doesn't do anything. Go on, tell me. It tells the time. That's about it, isn't it?
It tells the time. You read your messages on it. You can control your music. And that's just out the gate. We're still waiting for the apps to be developed.
Yeah, just waiting. Just waiting.
How much further is it from your wrist to your pocket?
It's a bit further each time Apple bring out a new product, I would guess. Yeah, absolutely. We got a question from Batwin. She said, I have a question. How do I move spare space from my boot camp to my main Mac partition? Can I change it after I've already created it? And will she lose any...
utility? Yes, live partition updates in Mountain Lion. And utility.
Will she lose any data? Just finish the question.
Be backed up because you're messing with the partition structure of the drive. So you're right down at the bottom level of the drive, but it's all fine. You can go into Disk Utility. Make sure that your Windows stuff's backed up. Make sure Time Machine's done it. Disk Utility, click on the partitions and modify the partition
sizes. You can basically click and just slide the partition, can't you? It's not even a pick a number thing. You just pull a bar up and down and life's good.
You just got to be careful that your drive isn't too fragmented because if it is, you could have stuff on what should be an empty part of the drive. So you just got to be a bit careful.
And remember, Batwinch, if it all goes to hell, there's always Dr. Happy Mac.
Well, back your data up, as he says, but theoretically you should be able to do it without losing any data. So
I've never seen it go bad. The only thing that you can get is you can try and resize the partition, and it will warn you if the file system is too badly fragmented to do that, and it will tell you that the file system needs repairing before it can resize it, but that's quite rare.
It's not a bad effort to go into to Disk Utility, though, and just repair your drives and verify them each month or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that should be a standard thing that it does before it allows you to change the structure of the partitions anyway, but it just gives you the option.
Well, if it took a bit of time, you wouldn't question it, would you?
No, but it's like any of these things. You know, too much
if it gives you too much leeway, you can mess it up. It shouldn't give you the option.
It does check for you. You resize the partition, and then it checks that it can do it. And if it knows it can do it, it does it. And if it feels that the FRAS system is too fragmented, it tells you it can't do it.
Yeah. So it does stop you, because in the old days, it didn't stop you. You just let you mess it up.
There we go. Top answer.
See, it says you don't want to be doing that.
Oh, you don't want to be doing that.
You want to be buying an RX-8 instead.
Exactly.
Some leaked pictures of the new iPad mini back. It's aluminium with a blue icon. I really hope that blue icon gets lost, because that doesn't look nice at all. But it's supposedly what it's going to look like. Very much like the current one. I hope it still fits in the case that I've got.
I told you last time, colours is where it's happening.
Oh, you reckon they're going to do different colours on all of those? Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, living the colour lifestyle colours.
You did say. Credit to
them. They've never coloured just the logo before, though, have they?
You know, what they want to do, they want to, you know, like you do with your MacBook Pros and things, and it glows. So what they should do is have the actual Apple sign glow the same as it does on a MacBook Pro, but then be able to pick a colour or have it change multiple colours. So, you know, you could have it all built in, whatever colour you want.
And the intensity of the light can be directly proportional to your battery as it's sliding down in real time.
There you go.
Yeah, that's going to work.
The best one of those I saw was on eBay. Someone did a how-to where they actually put a flat LCD panel behind the Apple logo and routed the EyeSight camera feed to it so that you had live video through your Apple logo.
Oh, blimey.
And they sort of coloured the logo for the first 15 to 20 years of the company, didn't they?
They did.
I'll tell you what, that's not very scratch-proof, is it?
Not if the aluminium
showed up. It's scratched a bugger.
It is scratched, which makes me think it's probably real because of that. I think that really is it. I mean, the one thing I said, I mean, I was talking before we started with the chat room, and the one thing I said is, you know, if Apple brings out a watch, I can pass on it. If Apple brings out iPhone 5S, I'll have a look at it, but I'm not too unhappy with my 4S at the minute. I may not. If I leave it on a railway line again somewhere, I might wait to the 5S. But the only Apple item that I currently have that I would buy the next iteration, regardless of what the spec was almost, is the iPad mini. If they brought a new one out now, money's gone. I'll have it. Thank you very much. Wifey, there you go. There's the small one, my old one, and I'm done.
So what does the old one not do that you'd want the new one to do?
I don't care. I don't care. I've got.
Now we know why Apple makes so much money.
I've never suffered from fanboyitis before. Never. I've always looked at something and thought, do I want it? Don't I want it? What's the merits? Shall I get it? Shan't I get it? With the iPad Mini, they bring out a new one, I'm buying it. They don't have to do a keynote. Just say there's a new iPad Mini. Click here to buy. Done.
That back case, though, it looks thicker, doesn't it? So it's the rumour is that that's slightly thicker to accommodate the Retina display, because that's the big thing with the iPad Mini. That's the only thing, really, that people have criticised it for. And it's no criticism, really, because the screen is actually very, very good, and you don't really need the Retina.
No.
But I think it's a given that, if not the next one, the one after that, they will have to bring out a Retina display. And to do that, they might have to make it a little bit thicker to accommodate the extra battery they'd need for all the pixel pushing that would have to do.
I'll tell you something that annoys me.
Go on.
When on your Mac, and it comes up with updates available, it gives you two options, details or update. It doesn't give you a dismiss, does it? How do you get rid of the bloody thing?
You press the X.
You
swipe it. You click over it with the mouse, and you swipe it to the right with gestures, and it swipes it away.
Or you hold down the button on the back of your Mac for 3 seconds. That tends to get rid of it.
No, if you're talking about the update, you can click details, and then you just close the App Store once it opens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why isn't there an X on it? Why is there not a dismiss, you know?
Yeah, it's an insanity, and it's just the horrible, probably the biggest, most horrible bit of OS 10.8 is that one dialogue box is 90% of everything that's wrong with Mountain Lion in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big win for the update. If they can get rid of that, then they're pretty much gravy.
Yeah, it's really annoying. I'll tell you another thing. If you're doing like a screen capture thing and that bloody thing comes up, you have to restart the whole thing, don't you? When I do screen capture now, I turn off Wi-Fi.
That's actually quite clever.
Yeah, you must have an awful lot of stuff popping up, though, because I never get an issue.
Snapping that off.
I know, it's not like it's constant. You only get it once every 10 hours or so if it does ask.
Now you get emails and Twitters and all that stuff, don't you?
So, yeah, okay. Why don't you just switch notifications off instead?
Yeah, but I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. Just if you turn off Wi-Fi...
By switching off Wi-Fi, you're switching off notifications by default because there won't be any. So you might as well just switch off notifications. There's probably a notification menu item that you can toggle it on and off.
You go into system preferences, into notifications, and you can tell it which apps you want to work with notifications, so you can turn mail off and you won't get any email notifications.
I know all this. That's what I'm saying. I just turn off Wi-Fi.
Or you can switch notifications off for 24 hours.
No, but what I'm saying is, Will, that if you look at... There's probably a notifications app or there's a dot menu file in the in system library that'll do it. Like, there's an eject one that you can just double-click and it opens up the eject one.
But why funny about doing all that? I just turn it off.
Because it's quick and easy.
I agree. It's too complicated for its own need.
Yeah.
You know, like on the iPad and the iPhone, you've got airplane mode. They should have an airplane mode function for OS X. It would make life a lot easier.
Because that would look really... You'd look really good walking into, like, the economy class of a jet with a 27-inch iMac, and you can sit it on my lap, airplane mode on.
Okay, we could call it something else.
Now, before a fight breaks out, Batwinch in the chat room says, I've got a Mac, I've got Mac OS 10 Lion 10.75. Do I have to upgrade to Mountain Lion to get the slider on disk utility? It's a 2.8 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Geo 4 meg mid 2009 15-inch MacBook Pro. So that should be able to upgrade to Mountain Lion. But does Lion do the slidery thing? I thought it did. I have to say.
It does. And also Leopard and Snow Leopard does as well.
Yeah, I thought Lion did the slidery.
Live partitioning has been available for quite a long time.
There you go. Just back up first. Excellent. There's no other stories really. Oh, apart from Johnny Ive got a gold Blue Peter badge.
What a start.
So stuff you, sir, in Knighthood. I've got a gold Blue Peter badge, he said.
It was like the most excited I've ever seen him.
Really?
He looked so honestly absolutely chuffed, which I thought was really endearing. You know, all the money in the world, all the position he could possibly ever want, but that gold Blue Peter badge, you could see it obviously meant an awful lot to him, which I thought was lovely.
I'd crush small children in a rush for one. I totally get that, Alex.
Yeah. Intentionally or non-intentionally?
Intentionally.
Oh, I see. For
out of the way, you wee shape. I want me gold Blue Peter badge. I thought you'd have a comment there, because you think Johnny Ives a gold Blue Peter badge in himself, don't you?
Oh, the sun shines out of his arse, in my opinion. He's the future hope of Apple. I mean, other than the iPhone 5, he hasn't put a foot wrong.
Other than the iPhone 5, I'm sure he'd be pleased to hear you say that, mate.
Well, that's the Puck Mouse. The Puck Mouse wasn't great.
No, the Puck Mouse wasn't great.
Then, of course, there was... There's going to be a long list in the end, isn't there? If we're not careful.
The EMAC's not exactly startling either, is it?
Well, it was good for the price point, wasn't it?
What did the Romans do for us anyway?
Well, exactly. Johnny Ive could be the Antichrist by the end of this conversation.
And the G5 iMac, that was a bit of a dent.
Yeah, that wasn't great, was it, really?
No, that wasn't great. In fact, the whole white iMac thing wasn't a high point.
Let's get his gold Blue Peter badge back. I think they've...
Yeah, you bastard. you has been, you hack.
is he the most powerful man in Apple now, I wonder?
No, because he's got a boss.
Probably the most influential.
No, that's a good question. See, Don with the vocabulary again. That's good.
Mind you, he's in charge of software design now as well, so that's going to be interesting to see what he does with that.
Yeah, I'm going to miss my ripped-off calendar.
He might make it worse.
No.
If 10.9 comes out and it's all worse, then that's a bad thing.
It's going to take a while, though, isn't it, before he actually gets his, his influence is actually seen. I would imagine they've been working on, you know, the next versions before he got moved up to the position he's in. I don't know. We'll have to see.
It's going to be all silver. You know it is. It's all the crappy pretend leather's going to go. It's going to be all silver and sleek and lovely, isn't it?
Slick as snot.
What, you'll just be able to look at it, right? You'll open the operating system, and you'll go to calendar or whatever it is, and you'll just look at it, and it'll be a work of art. The beauty in the hardware will be matched by the beauty in the software, finally.
It's gorgeous, you won't even care there's nothing in your calendar and you don't have any friends in your address book. You'll still be happy.
You'll just, to be honest, I'll probably delete all of my friends, we haven't got many, but in the address book, just so I can look at the purity of the design.
What a great idea. The contacts section is now only spoiled by the contacts.
Yes.
That would be very Apple, wouldn't it? Adam in the chat room says, when are we getting the Johnny Ive doll? We've already had it. Will's already shagged it. It was last year at the Bash. If you want to come to the Bash, is the 6th of July, all day. It'll be here in Birmingham. Your postcode to get a hotel room is B36. Anything around that area, B36, B46, get yourself a room. The 5th in the evening, there'll be a curry over at the greatest curry house in the world. And then
I don't think so.
All day, it's better than the Aftab place. And then all day on the Saturday, there is the Bash down at a local hall. It's a huge hall. It's fantastic. It's got a big garden out the back. There'll be a pig roast and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to put tickets on sale at the start of March. You'll be able to 20 quid ahead for people, but everything will be provided for that. And it should be loads and loads of fun. And we'll do all the podcasts during the course of the day as well. It's a kid-friendly environment and partner-friendly, so bring the wife and the kids and the husbands and have a good time and relax and enjoy like-minded people in the company of. There you go. Good. 5th and 6th of July. This podcast and all the others is sponsored by UK2.net. They're brilliant. They keep us afloat. They've got every service that they sell. There's an offer code for British Tech listeners. All you have to do is go to BritishTechNetwork.com, click on the link from there to the sponsors page, follow that through to UK2, then come back to the sponsors page and get all your offer codes. You can save yourself an absolute fortune. In some cases, you could clear your basket entirely free. Completely and utterly. They support us, and they're going to carry on supporting us. They said that we've sent them a lot of great traffic, unquote. So I think that means good things. You guys have been buying UK2 service quite readily, and by buying from them and using that click-through off our webpage, we get the kudos for it. You keep us afloat. Without them, we're knackered. Absolutely knackered. We can't afford the bandwidth. It's 450 quid a month for the bandwidth that we consume. The shows are that popular. We're doing well in iTunes. If you can leave us a review in iTunes, that would be wonderful as well. Thank you very much. And if you tweet out hashtag UK2 or tweet to @UK2 and tell them how much you appreciate and support the network, that never goes amiss either, because that goes straight through to Craig, the guy who we've got the relationship with. And it's good to see that UK2 are supporting Marussia again this year in the F1 circuit. So we'll be following them closely and looking at Max and his mate. There we go. UK2.net, be lost without them. It's the cool thing. DMC, do you want to start us off, mate?
I certainly will. I'm going to cover an app I actually covered on the show this week, and the iOS show comes out tonight. It's a great file sharing application that allows you to share between your iOS devices and also from iOS to the Mac as well, and from Mac to iOS. It's called InstaShare. If you've had a play with it yet, it's a free app. It is iAd supported, but there's an in-app upgrade for 69p to get rid of the ads. But basically, it's sort of like AirDrop for iOS. You run it on your iOS devices. There's a free client for your Mac, so you run it on your Mac, and then you get access to your photos on your iOS device. You just tap a photo and drag it, and then you can see all the other devices on your local network that have got InstaShare installed. Drag it across, and it just gets transmitted across Wi-Fi or Bluetooth.
Is it that easy?
It's very, very simple. It's very straightforward. It's not just restricted to photos. It'll transfer any file across to your iOS device. And if you're in an iOS, if you're in another application and you want to send a file from that application, you can open the file in InstaShare and then send it that way. So very good, very good. Very nicely put together as well.
Excellent.
Right. InstaShare.
Did you share a price?
No. Free.
Free.
Oh, well, free or 69p in-app upgrade if you want to get rid of the adverts. Excellent.
It's free. I'm downloading it right now.
Excellent. Free. Lovely. Next to Donnie's Dr. Happy Mac. Different order, mate. I've thrown you now, haven't I? Do you want me to come back to you, all right?
No, I'm good. Basically, my one was that a client of mine showed me this earlier in the week, and he thought it was really lovely, and I thought it was really cool. And it's only $29.99 from Amazon, and it is the IVSO, I believe you call it, IVSO, right. iPad 3 and 2. It's a leather bound cover with a Bluetooth keyboard built into it.
Very good. And how much?
It's for $9.99. I mean, my client, who's slightly wealthy, paid several hundred pounds for a handmade Spanish leather cover for his iPad, and one of the people that works for him came in with this, and he threw his several hundred pound one away and went and got one of these, and he prefers it. And I played on it, and I think it's brilliant. It's a little black Bluetooth keyboard on one side, and it's a really nice idea. Certainly better than any of the covers that Apple provide. If so, iPad cover, $29.99.
If so, excellent. Can you put a link in the document for us, please? If we could get the links in the document for all the picks, that would be great, because there's a guy called Miles Wheatley who makes the Snotes, the show notes for us. They're on Snotes on the website on the left-hand side. Thank you, Miles. We'd be lost without you, mate. We wouldn't have any show notes without you, mate. He does a grand job. And also, I want to thank Mac Jim as well, who has just left us in the chat room. But Mac is the BTN news hound. He goes around and grabs loads of stories and puts them in the doc for us to chat about. So, again, we'd be stuffed without him as well. Alex G, have you got anything for us, mate? Because I did pounce on you a bit.
Funny enough, I bought these a while back, but they did take a little bit longer to come than they were supposed to. But I bought the $29.99 Apple Universal Dock for my 4G and 4GS. That's the 3G and 3GS as well. That was without a cable, and that was $29.99. And it has the remote throughput function, which I used occasionally by accident, because sometimes I used to use the remote to operate my MacBook Pro, and then my iPhone would start playing, and everything got really horrible. So I ended up putting a bit of tape over it, just so I couldn't interfere with it. And it didn't do anything, because it still happened, but because I didn't realise it was Bluetooth. So I went to use it the other day, and it stopped working. $29.99, and it probably just lasted over a year, which was a bit disappointing.
That's a bit much.
So I went on to Amazon, and there were ones for 99p, and I thought, I can't. I'm not doing 99p. So I really pushed the boat out, and I bought ones for £2.75 instead. And they're universal docks, £2.75. They don't have the remote bit, but they do have the line out bit. They also come with the USB cables, is it 30-pin USB cables?
Yep.
£1 delivery. I bought four of them. The reviews were sort of four out of five. I tried them, and I can't fault them. But £2.75, there is a pound shipping, but £2.75, including the cable, universal, old-style docks. I've got one that plugs into one of my little stereo systems in front of the house, so I can basically listen to my music from my iPhone, or to be honest, it's Hancock's half hour through my iPhone. I've got them dotted around the house where I just had the plugs hanging out the wall, because it's a lot nicer to dock something than throw it across the table on a wire. So have a look on Amazon. It's a really convoluted, silly name. It's by PJP Electronics, and it's an right. iPhone 4 dock charger cradle, blah, blah, blah. But they're only £2.75. And I haven't managed to break them, and I bought four of them, and they all work. So there you go.
Kelly's pick, because she's not here, I don't know why, but Kelly's pick was the 1993 Apple catalogue. There you go. she's got her own explanation for why that's the case, I'm sure, but she tweeted it out and she said that was her pick, the 1993 Apple catalogue. And there's some nasty looking stuff on there. God. Back to the. I remember buying a tiny computer that looked like that. It was awful. Yeah, tiny.
So do I.
There's someone else who had a bad memory of tiny. Excellent. Next person is Kyle. What do you have for us, mate?
Yeah. Well, I just have something very simple, very free, because it's me, and just one of those things. Just a flashlight for the iPhone. I think it's just called flashlight. And it actually came in very handy, because we had a brief little power failure the other day towards evening. Couldn't get to the... like our backup little thingies that we have here. And I needed this, and it worked out really well. And I kind of like that you can control the beam of the light a little bit. I don't know if others do this or not, but I just remember having it on the phone, and it came in handy this week. And hell, it even comes in with a compass. So you can't go wrong when it's free.
So it's dark, and you can see where you're going and know where you're going. Excellent.
Exactly.
And it's free.
Yeah, and it's free.
Tommy Titus lives. Well done, pal. Mr. Green, I wait with bated breath for what your pick is, mate.
Well, you know, in the past that you did
What was that called? That, what was it called?
I need a few more hints than that.
Procut X.
Procut X, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, the same people who sort of developed that, pixelfilmstudios.com, also do a load of plugins for Final Cut Pro 10. And they're fantastic. If you want to add, well, also anything really, whether it's like a moody look or a cinematic look, or you want to add snow or fog or flares or whatever it is, whatever sort of look you're looking for in Final Cut 10, you can buy a plugin from them and it'll do it. I'm not saying that you can't do the same thing yourself. What are you doing? It's the dog. The bloody dog. He's doing something. He's got a guilty look at his face. He's looking up at me and saying, I'm not doing anything.
He's left you a steamy in the corner, mate.
No, he's below my desk and he's scratching up some of my cables.
Yeah, he's left you a steamy in the corner of the office. Finish your pick, dude.
Well, that's it, really.
That's it, right.
Yeah, but a few of them. I remember why I did this one now. I remember why I did this as a pick, because I've just released a new one called, so they all begin with Pro, right? So the Pro Fog and Pro Pixie and whatever. Pro Ogram, which is a hologram effect. So it's Star Wars, you know, when you get the little woman on the, the little woman on the table with all the flickery gubbins going on, right? You can recreate that using this plugin. It doesn't really, and it sort of randomizes effects and all that. So it looks like it's coming from distant space and all the noise has sort of gotten into the hologram as it's been transmitted. And then you take your video or footage against, or film against a green screen. And then you just sort of drag this little thing onto it. And you can resize it and stick your little man on a table or a little woman or whatever. And it's really good. It's really good fun. That's and they're very reasonably priced. They're around about sort of $20 to $30. So, you know, 15 to 20 quid plugins. And as I say, you can do all of this stuff if you want to by hand, but using some of these plugins will save you a ton load of time. So pixelfilmstudios.com. Great stuff.
Good man, thank you very much. My pick is Siegecraft. It's an iOS application. It runs on your phone, it runs on your iPad and the iPad Mini. It's beautifully drawn. It's £1.99, so that's going to be $2.49 or $3-ish in the US store by Crescent Moon Games. And you basically have a little catapult and a little crossbow that you sling at people who are invading. Each level lasts about long enough for the morning motion, perfectly 5 to 7 minutes. But the problem with the game is you end up playing 5 or 6 of them and your legs go numb. So, there you go. Siegecraft by Crescent Moon Games. Beautiful little game, Siegecraft. Excellent. Where can we get a hold of you, Don?
Right, you can find me over at screencastonline.com, where you'll find my weekly video tutorials, links to the apps, and links to the Screencast Online monthly magazine as well.
And you've still got an offer running till the end of the month, didn't you say?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. Macworld 13, it was a discount offer for... membership, just go across to the sign up for a membership, type in Macworld 13 at the end of the process, and you'll get, I think it's a 40% discount.
Ooh, well worth it. It's well worth it at full price, let alone with 40% off, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Spot on. DHM, where are you, sir?
Well, running around being Dr. Happy Mac.
In an RX-8.
In an RX-8, maybe, probably not, but I've got to pick the Saab up from the garage in a minute. So, yeah, at Dr. Happy Mac. You can also do the following us on the old face wiper thingy. We've got the car one got launched earlier in the week. Thank you for everyone that's been downloading those. It's been good. And the final one in the quartet, which hopefully beginning of next week, will be album covers, which... I really have enjoyed making more than any of the other ones, and I think will be very interesting.
Cool. Well done, mate. Alex, where are you, sir?
I'm on Twitter, at Alex B. Fox, and I haven't written any apps whatsoever. I have nothing to sell here.
Nothing to see. Move along. Kelly is available at she's gone, there she is, she's not there. Kelly's available at Verso on Twitter, and she's also doing the Angry Mac Bastards podcast, and she goes on the International Mac podcast, I think, sometimes. I might have that wrong, but she definitely does the 2R podcast, so if you can go and have a look at her there, well done. She had to disappear, I'm afraid, something's come up. Kyle, where are you, sir?
You can just find me on Twitter at Kyle Swagger, Swagger with 1G.
Excellent, mate. You've given up on all the other outlets now.
Oh no, you can go to Google Plus, KyleSwagger.com. If, oh no, screw Google Plus. I don't know what the hell I was ever thinking.
Said Will Green, who is the man working closely with Google.
I thought the funniest tweet I've seen for weeks was a comedian chap that I follow, and he was commenting on the sad demise of Richard Briers, who was pretty funny, and you know, who looked exactly like my dad, and in fact made a career of looking exactly like everybody's dad, I think, who said, it made me think I really miss ever decreasing circles, or Google Plus as it's known.
Ooh, bad one. Did you do Where You Can Get Yourself Will?
What?
Did you do Where You Can Find Will? Did you say who you were and where you were?
You didn't ask me. You were talking
Will,
Dr. Happy Mac.
Where can we get a hold of you?
Did you know that Richard Briers is Bob the Builder's dad? And his mom is... what's her name?
This was a great story when you started, wasn't it?
No.
3.5 billion females to pick from.
No, she was the nurse in The Blood Donor.
Was she?
I don't recall The Blood Donor.
June Whitfield.
June Whitfield, yes. And Richard Briers had a love child.
Which is Bob the Builder. If you watch Bob the Builder, June Whitfield and Richard Briers are Bob the Builder's mum and dad, and they call him Bobby.
Right. Okay. Good to know. Thank you, mate. Really good.
Right. Bit of trivia for you there. You can find me at britishmac.com. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it is British Mac. Oh, I tell you what, if you do follow me on Twitter, there'll be a real bonus for you. Because
You'll actually have a podcast.
No.
Steady on.
No, it's a scientific experiment that I carried out in my hotel room a couple of nights ago that really sort of does push the boundaries. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll get a link to my scientific experiment in my hotel room that really, really pushes the boundaries.
Please send me that link as a review copy. That'd be great.
I'm. What's that? What's that bloke who wrote the
Bible?
No, he did the song that things can only get better. That guy,
D-Ream.
Yeah, but the scientist man,
Brian
was the
Cox.
Drummer.
Brian Cox, yeah.
He was the bass drum. He was a bass.
He was keyboard player.
Was he?
Yeah, he was keyboard player. Yeah.
Oh, he's done quite well for himself.
As soon as I see this, I am the new Brian Cox.
Apart from you don't know bugger all about physics.
You wait till you see this.
Well, send me the link. Send me the link, mate, and I'll be glad to pass my opinion. Thank you. As long as I thank God you didn't show it on the show, because I've got enough editing to do this week as it is, thanks to you.
What do you mean, show what?
Whatever it was you were doing by yourself in your hotel room, which is revolutionary. That's
pushes boundaries.
That pushes boundaries. Thank you. That's the words.
The thing is, I did it about 4 times, right? I thought, why is the audio not recorded? And then I went to the system preferences and I'd done it as a, you know, audio line in rather than a bloody microphone. It took me ages. So I had to keep doing it. I had to keep redoing the scientific experiment.
Cutting edge, mate. Well, at least you proved your results, didn't it? Now, I got an email this week from somebody who said, I know you're sick and tired of getting these emails like this and tweets, but can you ask Will, when is he doing another podcast?
Oh, yeah, I know. I know every time you ask for this, I say this weekend, and it is going to be, I will give
next
you...
Next weekend.
I will give you £100, right, if the podcast, the British Mac podcast, doesn't come out this weekend.
That's your drink this weekend, Will.
My truck. after doing the scientific experiment, it sort of wore me out a little bit, so I'm going to be doing the actual podcast this weekend.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I tell you what, if you don't follow me on Twitter, I might include the scientific podcast as part of... here's an idea. If I put it out as a... No, it doesn't matter. Should we move on? I'll tell you what, Don, you can put it on your podcast.
See, building tension only works well when you actually relieve that tension at some point by giving the answer out. So,
oh, it is worth it.
If you've enjoyed the last 2 hours, write to your MP, eh? Sorry, Don, you were going to say something then.
No.
Right, okay.
I think he's just in shock.
It's my... anticipation is fever pitch.
You were going to snap at one offer, weren't you?
I don't think so.
Snap at something.
You never know. I've got to see it first. I mean, it might be, you know, earth-shattering.
Might be. Don't hold that
breath.
I'll
bet you £100 it isn't.
Oh, I'll take that at 10 to 1. We'll be back again next week with the Mac Show. Andy and Ack will be here and all the usual suspects, and we'll have a great fun time, and we'll talk all the Mac news that isn't going to happen between now and then and just show you all the rumours instead. I'm Ewan Rankin on Twitter, @EwanRankin. Come and see us. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.